from the Online Trading Academy studio. This is AM 770 KTTH.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the only morning show you need to get you through that commute, to get you ready for your Monday, to get you mentally prepared for the week to come. You're listening to The Jason Rancho live on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. We got a lot to get to, only 3 hours to do it. John Kelly is out as chief of staff. We're going to tell you what that means for the president. Kitsap County may lose their mobile needle exchange program, plus Tacoma's bathrooms go gender neutral. We're going to get to those stories and so much more, but first, it's time to get to work the right way with the right way traffic, brought to you by the Online Trading Academy.
Good morning. You don't have to scrape any windshields this morning, which is probably the best news. We've had a number of problems in the South End already this morning, and it's left eastbound 512 very slow before South Hill Mall all the way up to the fairgrounds. The rest of it is cleaned out, and we're building volumes that are getting pretty heavy already between 18 and 516 on North 5 and North 167. The rest of the commute's in a little bit better shape. So far, that's AM 770 KTTH traffic. I'm Tammy Bennett.
Attend a free online trading academy workshop. Text the keyword backup to the number 57682 and register for workshops in Seattle, Puyallup, Federal Way, Tacoma, Mukilteo, Bothell, and Linwood. Text backup to 57682. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
So the chief of staff, John Kelly, he is going to be out by the end of the year, which should not be seen as a shock because the rumors have been swirling around for several months that he's going to be gone soon. Several people have said on and off the record, basically, that John Kelly has been unable to manage President Trump, who, if we're going to be totally honest here, is not easy to be handled. He does not seem like someone who's easy to be handled. He clearly, if we're judging just based on his Twitter feed, he generally is doing things that the chief of staff would perhaps prefer him not to do. It's the job of the chief of staff to try to keep the president on task as much as humanly possible, as well as sort of gear him in the direction of political expediency. The president doesn't have to believe anything that the chief of staff believes. The president doesn't have to do anything that the chief of staff does. But you're supposed to understand that this is the job of a chief of staff. He has been very good for the most part over the course of his tenure. But now it's time for him to move on.
John Kelly will be leaving, but I don't know if I can say retiring, but he's a great guy. John Kelly will be leaving at the end of the year. We'll be announcing who will be taking John's place. It might be on an interim basis. I'll be announcing that over the next day or two. But John will be leaving at the end of the year. He's been with me almost 2 years now, as you know, between the two positions.
And again, he's done a mostly good job. The question now is, who is next? One of the names that's been rumored is Nick Ayers, that he would take over this position. The president over the weekend actually offered him the job, but apparently they couldn't come to terms with an agreement. And Nick Ayers, who is currently the chief of staff for Vice President Mike Pence, he's actually also leaving the job by the end of the year. This is for him. The reason he's doing it is to spend more time with his family and kids out in Georgia. He's in his mid-30s. This is not exactly the type of life you want to live if you want to also have any sort of semblance of a family life. So he's out. There's no clear front runner. There's no clear, obvious successor to John Kelly. And so now over the course of the coming days and coming weeks, you'll start hearing some names come out there. For Rick Santorum, who's now on CNN as a political analyst, the senator says Trump would be better suited with someone who's a little bit more politically savvy than John Kelly, which, to be fair to John Kelly, that never was his strong suit. And he acknowledges that. He went into this job knowing that that wasn't what he was known for.
I think the lockdown tough general that, quote, Trump respects didn't work. In, quote, controlling Trump. I like the idea of someone who is a politician, someone who is respected by the president, for his political instincts, because that to me is sort of the secret sauce of how you get the president to focus more on his agenda and the things that many of us have been telling the president to focus on. You appeal to his the political side. John Kelly could never make that argument. Mr. President, politically, you can't do this. Well, who's John Kelly to say whether something's smart politically? You have someone like a Nick Ayers or others who have a real strong political background. I think he can be much more influential.
Or a Rick Santorum?
No, not a Rick Santorum.
Yeah, no, not a Rick Santorum on anything. Barely yes on him being on CNN. Meanwhile, folks are wondering if John Kelly was actually fired or was this his choice to step down. The economic advisor to the president, Larry Kudlow, formerly, of course, of CNBC, told Fox News this Sunday that no, he wasn't fired. I don't think so.
Everybody's going to have disagreements. That's the way life works. But was he fired? I don't think he was fired. I wasn't privy to that final conversation. But the president's had great things to say about him.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So King 5 reports that Kitsap County's syringe exchange program, which is run by the People's Harm Reduction Alliance, which is a rather out there fringe kind of group that basically wants to legalize heroin, even though they're not explicitly taking that position, they are facing what King 5 is calling an uncertain future, in that they're handing out these clean needles, which, okay, that's got it. But they're needles, meaning you are enabling people, basically enabling addicts to continue with their addiction. And it's possible that they're going to run out of funding. In fact, they're already running in the red in Kitsap County. And so the mayors there, specifically the Bremerton mayor, Greg Wheeler, and Polesbo mayor, Becky Erickson, are saying, okay, maybe the whole idea of a mobile unit of needle exchange is inappropriate. Let's put them specifically in actual brick and mortar areas. Let's put them in specifically clinics, because you've got some of these people who are already going to the clinics. They're already there. Let's actually meet them where they're already going. There's some pushback coming from the folks at the People's Harm Reduction Alliance saying, hey, you know what? We're just going to further alienate these people. We're going to further isolate these addicts. They're not going to go to the clinics the way that you think they are. We need to keep the money going so that we can go to where they are, because we'll be able to cut down on the exchanges of dirty needles, which, of course, leads to some pretty bad scenarios health-wise for these people. And I'm of a very simple position. This is 100% immoral. This is 100% immoral. And it's even worse than the heroin injection sites, because at least under the heroin injection sites, you're giving them these clean needles for which they are using them right in front of you, which means you can prevent an overdose if it happens, or treat an overdose if it happens, and then collect the dirty needles. Because the truth is, right now, all over Kitsap County, no matter what the People's Harm Reduction Alliance will tell you, you're finding a whole bunch of used needles all over the place. The Bremerton Parks Director, Jeff Elevato, told King 5, we find dozens per day. Our biggest concern, of course, is exposure to people who use the parks and exposure to our staff who have to handle these things. They keep poo-pooing the idea, oh, there's not that many dirty needles everywhere. In fact, there are going to be way more dirty needles all over the place if you don't allow us to exchange them for clean ones. Really, I feel like there's going to be less needles if you're not giving out needles like they were candy. Because the truth is, and this started several years ago, where at least in the Seattle area, what was supposed to happen was, here, we'll give you these clean needles. You can come back and get even more clean needles, but you're going to have to bring back the dirty ones so we can dispose of them the correct way. But now you talk to people in the community. Now you talk to officers who are serving the community saying, yeah, they stopped doing the actual exchange a long time ago. It's no longer an exchange. It's a handout. That's what we've done. And if, God forbid, any of these people die from an overdose after getting a needle specifically from the People's Harm Reduction Alliance or the city, which is basically the county in this case with Kitsap County, which is basically what's happening, I wonder who's responsible. Who's held responsible? And do you think at all the People's Harm Reduction Alliance feel bad if they give out a needle that ends up getting used in a point where someone dies of an overdose? This is wrong. I'm glad that they're pushing back at this. I'm glad that they're going to hopefully cut down on the mobile portion of this. I'm just disgusted that they're putting it in a place where you're supposed to go for actual treatment, not for more needles. How about this? I know that this is a shock for some people to understand. How about this idea? Just go with me for a moment. Instead of giving them needles, give them actual treatment on demand. Whoa, I know, it's really out there. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Blue Lives Matter.
Finally, Kent Police Chief Rafael Padilla, alongside command staff members and officers with the police department, they're going to talk with residents at a Coffee with Cops event at a Starbucks in Kent, specifically the one at Kent Kingley Road. The Kent Reporter says there's no set agenda, which is kind of why I'm on the fence of things like this. Like, I'm of two positions. Number one, I see the value in something like this because you're normalizing interactions with cops. The truth is, no matter who we are or what we've done, when a cop approaches you, generally, unless you ask for the cop to approach you, you get automatically really nervous and like on edge. Like, oh my God, is it gonna? What did I do? Did they catch me illegally downloading that stuff? I don't do that anymore because I get the screeners coming from. Like, what do I do? Like, we automatically go to that position, and it makes things way more tense than they should be. Because if you're interacting with a cop who can sense you're tense, they're going to wonder why you're tense, what it is you're hiding. Then they get tense, and then the interactions can go to a place where we don't want it to go. So anytime we can get everybody in a room together just to have normal conversations over a cup of coffee is great. My problem is people are going to show up and they're going to ask some questions in which the Chief Padilla is going to be like, I got to look into it. I don't know the answers. Because we all want very specific, hyper-specific questions answered. What's going on my block? Unless it's a big issue, Chief Padilla is not going to know specifically what's going on that one block in suburban Kent. He's just not going to have that. And so I feel like you're going to be set up for failure where you're showing up. You have all these questions that are important to you, but to virtually no one else. The chief's going to be like, I don't know. We're going to have to follow up and get back to you. And then they're not going to get back to you. And then all of a sudden you're going to have a bad interaction with a cop. So I just wonder if this is the best way to do it versus, hey, why doesn't he show up with an agenda to say, okay, I'm going to tackle the 10 biggest issues in the neighborhood of Kent over the course of, you know, the next hour. And we'll do some Q&A afterwards. And you know what? At the end of this, if I didn't get to something you want discussed, just let me know. And the next time we meet for Coffee with Cops or Coffee with the Chief, I'll have answers to that. I feel like that might be a better format. But I suppose I'm not going to get in the way of any format in which cops hang out with people and vice versa. Because I do still think that ultimately that does go a long way. The reason why I'm comfortable with cops is because I know a bunch of cops. And by the way, even then, if I see a cop right behind me and I'm driving around or I'm walking around and I see that bike officer right next to me, I'm like, oh my God.
You always start to clutch the steering wheel.
Oh, it's just a little bit more tense. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in and hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. If you want to send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. That's the number to our tax resolution hotline. Tacoma just pushed a whopper of a virtue signaling law. They just passed a gender-neutral bathroom law that forces private companies, restaurants, shops, to label their single-user restrooms with gender-neutral signs. So in other words, these bathrooms are already gender-neutral by any practical standards, because they are, in fact, single-stall bathrooms. But we're now changing the sign so both of them are open to anyone who wants, because it's supposed to send a message of inclusivity specifically to transgender people. And there was a city report that came out from Tacoma that quoted Pride at Work. It's a LGBTQ union membership group. And they say that they have, quote, identified that bathroom access is a constant worry for transgender and non-binary people. 59% of transgender people avoided using a public restroom in the past year because they were afraid of confrontations. I avoid the use of public bathrooms because ill, because they're just like gross all the time. And you can never find one that's not ill. And so I'm kind of in the camp of I try to stay away from these as humanly possible. And the truth is, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed despite this demand of new signage. The issues of people who are transgender or non-binary are exactly the same. Right now, you've got a male and a female bathroom and a transgender person has the choice, right? And sometimes they're going to pull back from having that choice because, let's say, they are biologically male presenting as female. They get looks when they go into the female stall. They're still going to get looks. They're still going to get looks. It's just going to be a different kind of look at a different kind of time. But they're still going to get looks. And so if we're hoping that this is somehow going to change the way society views transgender people, I'm sorry to say that you are wrong. I would prefer that no one negatively judge people who are choosing to transition, who are choosing to present in a gender that is not theirs biologically, because ultimately it doesn't impact you or me at all. It impacts none of us. The only person it impacts is the specific person who is making that choice. Especially when we're talking about single stall bathrooms, right? Do you care? Do you honestly care? And think about this just from the perspective of what I've heard are the concerns of gender neutral bathrooms. And generally speaking, when we're talking about like locker rooms, it's shared by a whole bunch of different people. And I understand why someone who has a young daughter doesn't want a transgender female using the locker room, because they're going to get undressed and you're going to see a male appendage there and you don't want to have that conversation with your kid. Like, I totally get that. But when we're talking about single stall bathrooms, what do you care? How does this impact anyone at all? It is a virtue signal law. Sometimes symbolism is important. I suppose I would argue that it's important here, even though it doesn't really do anything. But this doesn't change anything. And it shouldn't concern you. Now, I will say I am uncomfortable with the government saying you have to change your signage. I'm uncomfortable with that only because presumably the restaurants and the shops have to pay for the signage. Now, it's cheap. You're not spending a $10,000 on signage changes. But I do think that ultimately, because the city of Tacoma is forcing you to make this change, they should be the ones who have to pay for it. If you're not interested otherwise in changing your bathroom signage, they should have to pay for this. And the truth is, this impacts a very small amount of places because a lot of them have already been doing this. A lot of you've been to Tacoma, they're already doing this. And when we have single stall bathrooms, for the most part, they already have signage on there indicating that it doesn't matter if you're male or female.
Yeah, what does it matter? It's got a lock on the door. Haven't you done that thing where you're at a bar and there's a guy and a girl single stall bathroom and you've noticed that it's heavily populated with males in this place, and the male
it's usually the
restroom.
Opposite. It's usually the women's line is really long,
well,
and the men's
just,
line isn't.
There's only because three women in this establishment, and none of them are using the restroom, but there is somebody in the men's restroom, so you just go into the girls. I do that all the time.
Don't call them girls.
Excuse me.
First of all, they're women, and not always.
Females.
So, no, you can't even say that anymore. It's just, they're humans.
Human.
Well, you can't say human, because there's man
right.
in it, so they're people. Well, what about the non-gender binary? What about the ones who don't? I don't know.
Living beings?
I will say this. The ones who get the short end of the stick here are women, transgender women or otherwise, because female bathrooms are so much cleaner than male bathrooms. And now men being able to use both of them means they're going to sully up both of them.
It's I think they may argue different.
Women?
Yeah.
Why?
I've heard lots about how women's bathrooms are very messy.
Is that true?
Yeah.
They have little lounges, they get chairs and back massages when they use a female bathroom.
No, I've
and
heard
the men
horror
just pee
stories.
Everybody, everywhere.
Well, that's true, too.
Just everywhere.
Yeah.
You're like, how did you get urine on the sink? But I don't understand that. Male bathrooms are the grossest. So I'm just saying, transgender people, I would have dealt with maybe some of the angry looks or the weird looks to use the cleaner bathroom.
Well, they have the option to pick the cleaner one.
I'm saying they're both going to be dirty now because men are going to use them both. Men are the worst when it comes to... They are! We're the absolute worst when it comes... Not me. I'm perfect when it comes to the bathroom because I don't use any of them. Ever. Like, not even in the house. My bathroom is perfect. You're listening to the Jason Rantz Show, 1-800-465-8770. It's an unbitter tax resolution hotline. We're back at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. In fact, if you text the keyword Rantz, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to my latest blog. We're going to talk about it in the 7 o'clock hour, but you can get a head start on how just days after they broke ground at Key Arena for the renovation project, they're already in deep trouble. They're already in deep trouble. So text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, And I'll send you a link to my latest blog. We'll talk about it in about 30 minutes from now. But we're going to take a pause from NHL talk and a pause in general from some of the local stories, even though there is a local twist to this, to talk about why millennials are just the absolute worst. They are the worst because they're constantly complaining about things. And yes, I understand the irony in complaining about complainers. Don't give me that look. I totally understand it, Producer Darren. You see, there's a new survey out. And in the survey, it shows that millennials, both locally and nationally, are struggling to buy homes. They say they want to buy homes. In fact, most of them, they want to purchase a home, but they have money issues. This according to a survey from Apartment List. It's a rental data website. They talked to 6,400 millennial renters, and they found out that thanks in large part to student debt, these millennials say that they're unable to afford a home. Now, locally, if you look at the Seattle area, Seattle Metro, 74% of prospective millennial homebuyers would need more than 20 years to save a 20% down payment on the price of a median home. Now, of course, it's way worse in San Francisco because the housing market there is very hot still, 82.3%. In Pierce County, of those who responded, millennial renters who plan to buy a home, 45% have saved nothing for a down payment at all. That means they're not going to get a home anytime soon. While 10% have saved $10,000 or more, 19% of Seattle respondents have saved so far $10,000 or more. Now, this is a reflection of three things, I think, and we're going to talk about each one of them. Number one, these people are looking in the wrong place to purchase a home, meaning they're looking in a place that is just way outside of their means and will likely for the near future be outside of their means. Number two, these millennials are overstating how much student loan debt they actually have. When you go down and you actually look at what they're spending their money on, you can see lots of places where they can start saving, but they choose not to. And number three, here's just a basic reality. You went to a school that you couldn't afford. You took out student loan debt so that you can major in a field of study that you know is never going to lead to a meaningful job. My apologies to all of you who really, really care about dance theory. My apologies to those of you who have degrees in women's study, not paying the bills. Doesn't mean you shouldn't have gone into it. It's totally up to you. But it doesn't pay the bills. And when you take out a huge bunch of student loan debt so that you can get that photography degree, you're going to have some problems paying them off and buying a new house. So let's talk about all these in the specifics. Because I start off by saying you're looking in the wrong place because I believe that millennials can afford to buy homes. They just can't afford to buy the homes in the places that they're looking. And if you're looking for a home, a condo, if you're looking for a house, a single family or a duplex or whatever in, say, oh, I don't know, Capitol Hill because it's near all the cool bars, understand you're not going to be able to afford it. Now, could you afford a home in Rainier Valley? Could you afford a home in Northgate? Could you afford a home in Snohomish County, Pierce County? Probably. Almost assuredly, yes. If you're willing to put down some savings, which gets into the number two part. We can't save, man. Like, I want to save money, but I can't because it's student loan debt. It's intimidating. You have a Netflix account that you don't use, but you're paying $14 a month on. You buy a pack of cigarettes a day. That adds up. You're spending money on a whole bunch of stuff you probably don't need, and you're complaining about the cost of living and student loan debt? Really? Because I've had people in my life, because I'm technically a millennial. I'm like by the skin of my teeth, I hang on to that millennial label. I knew people in my life who constantly complained about not being able to afford rent when they were buying a pack of cigarette a day, when they were buying Netflix and Hulu every single month. They were going out Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights to bars, getting sloshed off of really expensive booze, only to complain about the cost of living. I'm sorry, you're kind of putting yourself in a position where you're not able to save or pay off the student loan debt because you don't want to live without the Netflix, without the Hulu, without the cigarettes and the booze. Now, if you don't want to live without those things, okay, fine, but you kind of lose the right to just complain about the cost of living if you're putting yourself in a position like that. There are also a lot of you who decided to go to a school that you couldn't afford. And this is now more for the parents, because I know that there are a lot of parents out there who are listening, who have kids who are getting ready to go to college or thinking about going to college, and you're wondering where it is that they should go. They tell you they want to go to Gonzaga, but they can't afford it. Then you tell them, I would love for you to go to Gonzaga. You're either going to have to work your tail off so you can get scholarships, or you're going to have to go to somewhere else where we can afford it. You're going to have to go to UW Tacoma, UW Bothell, UW Seattle. You're going to have to go to Bellevue College. You're going to have to do something else if you don't get these scholarships. I know you want to go to that really, really expensive school. I totally get it. But the fact is, you're only pulling in C plus B minuses. So you're not going to get those academic scholarships. We cannot afford it. And not only can I not afford it as your parent, you cannot afford it because you want to get this degree in English. Incredibly important. I hope you do whatever it is you plan on doing with that English degree. But the fact is, you're going to get out of college and you're not going to be able to pay off that loan debt in any meaningful way. Not quickly. And I don't want to create another kid, put a kid into the world who's going to complain incessantly over it. If you want to buy a house, you have to make smart decisions. And it's not like the whole idea of home ownership is new to people, right? Kids aren't one day saying, oh, I didn't realize when I was 17 that I might be able to buy a home at some point. I can't believe. No, you know that that's part of the American dream. And you're putting yourself in a position where you're not able to actually get to it.
I think you're covering a small percentage of millennials.
I don't think it's small as you think. I think it's much larger than what millennials generally say. Millennials always like to play victims. We all kind of like to play victim, right? Because it shows us as the underdog.
So then take me, for example. Okay. I would like to start house hunting here in the next couple months.
Okay.
Like, that's something my wife and I legitimately want to start doing.
Mm-hmm.
She makes twice as much money as I do, but we have two incomes.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing okay.
Where are you looking? And by the way, how old are you both for the audience? You're 28. How old is Ashley?
Median age 30.
Okay. How old is she?
She's 31.
Oh. I didn't know if she was that old.
Anyway, she does really well.
Yep.
She does have some student loan debt that we're working on, but it's not like she went to a private school. She went to Oregon State.
Okay.
She did that reasonably. It's still, and I have some family money that is going to go towards down payment someday. It's still completely unrealistic.
It's not completely unrealistic.
Yes, it is.
Where you're looking is completely unrealistic, because you're telling me that right now, if we were to just go over your finances, don't do that. But if we were able to just go over your finances, you're telling me I couldn't find a house that's within your means.
Yeah.
Outside,
you know,
of a neighborhood.
Maybe
that
in South Tacoma. Sure. But I'm not. She works in downtown Seattle. I work in downtown Seattle.
Yeah. There is
why spend 2 hours a day commuting when one day we're going to have a kid who they're going to charge per the hour for childcare.
This is
when we're spending 2 hours commuting both ways.
This is a result of choices. You choose to live in Seattle, a choice that I totally understand. That
no,
makes
it's
sense
kind
for you
of
both.
Necessary.
It's not necessary. It's still a choice. It's not necessary for you who works morning, who leaves your house. What time do you leave the house? 3:45-ish.
3:50.
Is there any traffic?
No.
Okay. Do you think there's going to be traffic if you move to Puyallup?
No.
No, there's still not. You're going to have to get up a little bit earlier because the commute's going to be a little bit longer. And the way back, you're not going to get any traffic either, for the most part, outside of I-5 in Seattle. For the most part, you're going to have the exact same experience. Now, you're choosing not to do that for a number of reasons. Number one, you don't want to put your wife through that because she works more traditional hours, right?
Right.
She's choosing to work in downtown Seattle. She could have gotten a job elsewhere, but
she
could
have, sure.
I'm still saying,
you know, we could both live in Omaha, Nebraska if we wanted to.
You could also live on the in the east side, greater east side, and it wouldn't be that much different than what your wife goes
through. No, it's one of the places we're looking, but it's still unrealistic.
It's not unrealistic.
Yes, it is.
It's hard. Don't confuse hard and unrealistic. Unrealistic means there's under no circumstances are you going to be able to find a home that you can afford that you want. And I reject that. I do think that it's hard. There's no doubt about it. It's hard in this general region because of the housing market. Now, the good news, the housing market is starting to cool significantly. In fact, we found this next story that tells us significantly now you're not having to compete with a whole bunch of other people. Now, before, as early as 2 months ago, and before that for the last several years, people were competing to buy a home within like a week. Which
bidding
means,
wars were driving it up like $100,000.
Bidding wars
every
were
house.
Nuts,
right.
Because you would say, I'm willing to put down 30%, but then there's someone else who's saying, oh yeah, I'm going to put down 35%. All of that is starting to go away. Number one, because Chinese investors, for whatever reason, have stopped investing. And they usually come to the table in this region and in Vancouver, British Columbia, with a whole bunch of cash and say, you know, I'm just going to buy this whole thing with cash. They use it as an investment property. Good for them. Then you've got people who, now that that's going down, interest rates are going up. And generally speaking, people are kind of looking at the area and saying, okay, maybe it's not worth as much as we've been paying. And so you holding out for just a couple more months, you're going to, it gets even easier. And then you know what's going to happen middle of next year, presumably even easier, including, by the way, opening up to you neighborhoods that right now you can't afford because of what you're saving. You want to, should we go? I read a Dave Ramsey book. Do you want to go over total financial freedom during this commercial break?
Sure.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Bring in your bank accounts, all of them. And by the way, your social security numbers.
Okay.
Don't ask questions. Just bring them.
I trust you.
Mistake number two. You're listening to the Jason Rancher. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show, live in the Online Training Academy studio. Don't forget, text the keyword RANTS to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my latest blog. Key Arena's renovation project is already in deep trouble. This after already delaying the start of the NHL season to 2021 and 2022. If you want to read up about it before we talk about it at 7 o'clock, text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. A woman has gone viral after canceling her baby shower because her family and friends thought that the name she chose for her kid will lead to a lifetime of torment. And I have to assume that they're right because the name is really bad. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. I will say this. Because when we talk about bad baby names, we just did the story last week of ABCDE, and they just call it, what was it, Abastity? Abstity?
Yeah, Abstity.
Abstity. And it's spelled literally ABCDE. And that poor kid is going to have a lifetime of, wait, how do you spell that? Oh, it's A-B-C-D-E. Wait, no, I know that's how it's pronounced, but how do you spell it? Oh, no, it's A-B-C-D-E.
Like, no, how's it really spelled?
It's just like, oh, this is a nightmare of every single time their name comes up, they're going to have to talk about this. This name isn't that bad. Squire Sebastian Senator. Now, I'm going to assume that this poor young kid, once he realizes how bad his mother is just going to go by the name Sebastian, which is a normal name. Sebastian Senator is not a crazy name. I suppose you can be, oh, Senator, hi, what are you going to be when you grow? Okay, fine. But there's worse things. It's not like Sebastian, millennial who complains all the time. Like, that would be a horrible name. Or I was going to say Sebastian Janitor, but then I thought maybe janitors would find, like, I'm slighting them. So I'm not 100% sure if this is a true story because it did originate on Reddit. But let's just go with the assumption that it's true because I believe something like this, where the mother is like, oh, let's get together. We're going to have a baby shower. And everyone's like, we can't go along with this because the name that you've chosen for your kid is so bad. We don't want to normalize it. She says, in explaining why the shower was canceled, she posted online, y'all have been talking bleep about my unborn baby. An unborn child. How can you judge an unborn child? He will not be allowed to have a nickname. He is to be called by his full and complete first name. Squire Sebastian Senator. So that's the whole full name. It's not even the last name.
Right. That's what I was going to.
They don't say the last
name. Make sure that you clarified that. Senator is not the last name.
Okay, fine. But also, it's three names. So it's not a first name. You're saying the full name is Squire Sebastian Senator, whatever the last name is, Smith. Well, let's just go with that. It's all S's. Alliteration. It's not going to change anything. The kid's still going to call himself Sebastian.
Right, but on all of his legal documents, maybe he does have a middle name too.
Sarah. I don't think you can have. So when I sign my name to a check or a contract or whatever, I don't use my middle name, Robert.
No, but on all of his legal documents, he will have three names listed as his first name.
But that's not a big deal, right? I mean,
it's just annoying.
Why? It's not annoying for you. I mean, right? So let's say on your birth certificate, it has 17 names. So it has 17. What are you going to do about it?
Well, how many times is it going to be someone going to say, you know, he writes three names and they go, no, I wanted just your first name. And he'll have to be like,
I'm saying he's going to choose not to do any of that. I'm saying when he gets older, he's just going to go with Sebastian. He's not going to do the whole Squire Sebastian, Senator the Third, Smith times 12 pie. Like, he's not going to do any of that. That'd be funny if it was a math equation. The woman defended her choice, claiming her family is descended from a long line of both squires and senators. quote, if you look back at our family tree, the survival of this clan, is don't use clan, is literally rooted in squiredom. We are all related to senators, too. The name conveys power. It conveys wealth. It conveys success. It conveys your mental illness, lady, which is really what this is about. People who name their kids weird names are horrible parents, and I feel like there should be a way. You know how we have, you know, in cases of someone who might be a harm to themselves and others, and so we take away their guns preemptively for a little bit? There should be a way to preemptively stop parents from naming their kids stupid names. Now, I know that there's some danger in that, right? Because what if he just wanted to be Chris, and someone says, we don't like Chris, or Darren with one R inexplicably. We don't like that. This poor kid's going to be a producer someday, and no one's going to be able to spell his name correctly, and it's going to drive him mad. We need to stop him from doing that. But I do think that reasonable people can get together and have a judge declare, and even if a jury, if we need to, a jury of his peers, of other kids who, before this law went into place, had really stupid names, could say, listen, kid, my name is Orange. Okay, I know what it's going to be like for you, Sebastian Squire, the third senator. Don't go, we're going to have to change this for you.
That's exactly what I was thinking. We should do a PSA and just like have people sit in front of a camera who have weird names and explain how horrible it's been for them.
You just gave me an idea for a video that I'm not going to put you on. But it's, you know, don't say okay with a smile, because I'm going to put you on this idea, and then you're going to complain for the next week about how much time it takes to do a 30-second video. That's exactly what's going to happen. Oh, it's taking me so I can't, you know, I can't even pull audio for the show because I'm going to do this video.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what's going to happen.
I know.
And then what am I going to say? Too bad, that's your job.
Right.
And then you're going to get mad, and then there's going to be resentment.
Perfect.
No, perfect. I cannot get script this already. We have to come, if you want to include a really bad name to include in our PSA, text the bad name, and it has to be a clean bad name, can't be a bad word bad name, to 1-800-465-8770. The three people who have the best bad names will include them in our PSA that will be done hopefully by the end of the week. So, by the way, I gotta organize. It's not easy. I can't just do it today. So text us, 1-800-465-8770 with the worst names ever. And I want full names. Don't give me just a first name like Orange. Give me a full name, middle name, the third escort, whatever you need to do, you put that. 1-800-465-8770.